Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Yak Gadget. For all your kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. Pelican cases, coolers, and lighting, go to pelican.com. The 153 Bait Company. For all your hard and soft bait needs, go to the153anglers.com. Now let's get this show started.
Boom, let's get this show started. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Chasing the Tide, your saltwater connection on the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dustin, back with you for another segment here. Just give you a little recap of what's been going on the past few weeks. Old Salty went up north. And fished one of the Northeast Texas Kayak Bass Leagues events. They kicked off their fall series on Lake Athens. I went up there, did a little pre-fishing in the evening, and threw a one-knocker spook all day and pulled off a second-place finish. So I was pretty stoked on that to get out of the salt water here and go try to chase some bass and see if I could still catch them. And ended up getting pretty lucky. So, yeah, that's been going on. Been on the water kind of scouting for a trout tournament coming up. We have some a few cold fronts here and there, but we definitely need some ones to stick around a little bit longer. It's that time of year, that transition, water's cooling down, days are getting shorter. It's just some days after the fronts with the high pressure, just having to downsize baits a little bit has helped. But yeah, there's been some fish moving. Like what I'm seeing, there's still some redfish in the marsh. So everybody get out there and catch some fish. We're going to go ahead and bring our guest on right now. I got somebody Texas local here. I'm going to bring him on tonight, Michael Escamilla, in the house tonight on Chasing the Tide. What's up, brother?
What's going on, brother?
Oh, man, just rolling. Pulled out the Christmas decorations and all that. Went to the movies today. Went with the family, went and saw the Ghostbusters Afterlife. It's pretty dangerous,
man. My wife got you hanging Christmas lights, huh?
Oh, I'm not hanging Christmas lights. We just pulled out the tree and all the little gnomes and all. She's like, it's a gnome theme this year, like little Christmas gnomes. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, my wife did the whole Grinch thing, man. She set up November 1st.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we got a Grinch blow up the other, about a week back.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that out and I'll put some stuff up. I don't hang no lights, man.
I'm not a fan of that,
man. I'm not a fan of lights. I'm not a fan of the lights. Now, if I did do lights, it'd just be the little single white ones. Just little, the round, like the old school lights to go around the roof line. I think that looks pretty cool.
It was nice and clean, yeah.
I don't want no Griswold funk, dude. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, man. Yeah, but thanks for coming on the show, man. We'll start out. Just give everybody a little backstory, introduce yourself, tell everybody where you're from and, fishing history and kind of what led you into that plastic boat.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on, man. I started off pretty much just like everybody did, back creek fishing, going down to the coast with the family, heading on the pier.
Yep.
I grew up about 20 feet from a little creek, and I would catch grasshoppers out in the field. My grandfather was a farmer. So we'd have crickets and grasshoppers, and I'd, get a little jar full of them, man, and head to the creek and just hang out there pretty much all day and put it on a bobber and watch little bass, little channels come through, and how it started. And I've been here pretty much Texas just about my whole life, about 33 out of the 35 years I've been alive. And just enjoy fishing in general. It started as a kid, and it was just a little hobby. And
that addiction run starts early, though, man.
It starts early, man. It kind of petered out when, you know, I went to college and, you know, focused on other stuff and school and cars, you know, all that stuff. And now that I'm getting older, getting slower, man, it's more of a more of a passion, put it that way.
True that. Definitely. Yeah. Same here.
You know? Same, man. And man, I honestly, it wasn't very big, you know, on the majority of my family, but my dad kind of put me on it. It was more of a pastime, like a bonding time, you know what I mean? You know, our family didn't really do it, but my dad, he didn't know much about it. So, you know, we go out there to Academy, Walmart, buy the leaders, you know, all the other cheap stuff. And, you know, the one-time stuff you take out there and it just gets put in the closet, you know, for 6-7 months. But it was always there. It wasn't a big part, but it was always there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Then what spurred your interest to jump in a kayak? When did that come about?
There was this one time here fishing at the lakes. I'd been bank fishing, you know, numerous times, 10, 15 times, probably caught one fish. And you know, all these guys in kayaks coming in with stringers full and boats, you know, coming in with ice chests full. Yeah. I just got tired of it. Tired of just sitting and watching. And it was like, you know, I got to get on the water somehow, you know, by any means necessary. And it was, you know, I didn't have a huge budget, you know, $400 or $500. And next thing you know, cruising online, you know, Craigslist, and picked up my first ocean kayak, man. Ocean Kayak Prowler 13. And that was it. It was all downhill.
It was all in. Like, new areas open up. You can get further. I mean, you got to paddle and spend a little energy. But it was so better than being stuck on that bank.
Exactly, man. It was just a whole different world opened up. You know, just sitting on the bank compared to being on the kayak. You're your own person. You can go wherever you want. You can be out there for however long you want. And then it's just being that close to the water, it's different. It's a lot different.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome.
You're more personal with the water. You can see and feel different things. You know what I mean? It's just that it's a different experience. And that's how it all started. It was just that cheap little used kayak. And it's been a roller coaster ever since.
Now, when was that? How long ago was that?
Man, you're talking probably 8 years ago, seven or eight years ago. I had a one good buddy of mine, Ann Lee. He had been enticing me into getting into kayaks, and you know, he'd post these big pictures of kingfish he would catch, you know, and snapper up the kayak, and he was like, "Oh, you gotta get one." So he was kind of my my go to man, my door, and I'd send him pictures of this kayak, send him pictures of that kayak, and he was like, "No, you're not gonna make it out there. You'll make it, but it won't be fun." And it was just that. It just steamrolled from that ocean prowler. Prowler, the vibe. And man, next thing you know, I was like, you know, I see these Hobie guys or these pedal drive guys going, you know, miles and, you know, coming out with bigger fish and more fish. And I'm like, yeah, all right, let's open that door. Let's invest. And I picked up an 18 Outback, and it was I just open up another world, you know, going further, less effort, you know, more efficient.
And then
again, just downhill after that. It was just one door opened up, and next thing you know, and here I am.
Yeah, and it's crazy, you know, when you first get into it, you're like, you can be overwhelmed with everything, and you're like, where do I put all this stuff and this and that? But dude, if he's out there, just there's an accessory for everything now. I mean, everything's being thought of. I mean, and that's the key about having everything organized. Like,
yeah, I would take a full tackle bag with me. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. No crate, no nothing, no rod holders. It was just one rod and a whole giant tackle bag in the back. And I would probably use like 3 or 4 lures, and that was it.
I still take a tackle hole. Yeah, you ought to see what I'm bass fishing, man. It's like, woo. I mean, but even like if I'm going to go, say, like target trout, you know, like this time of year, I'll have a small little Plano box with 4 or 5 corkies and some soft dines. And I'll have some jig heads. And then I'll have like the money bag that the Bass Mafia sells, Tackle Warehouse sells. I'll have that with my plastics and some extra jig heads. and maybe my leader in there, and then it's waterproof, so I can throw my phone and my keys in there, and it fits in the crate.
Yeah.
And I might have a backup box with some top waters and this and that, depending on water tip and all that.
Yeah,
I still pack a good bit of tackle. You know, it's just that bass fishing.
Yeah, that's a whole new world, man. Yeah. Those guys take like 12, 15.
I take 10, rods. 11 rods. Woo! You know, 10 or 11 rods.
Yeah.
Normally. But that's I'm saltwater side too, though. I'll find myself sometimes with five rods. I'll have a top water. I have a corky. I have like a double D on there. I'll have a big swim bait or glide bait, plastic, and then maybe a popping cork at times.
Always
ready to go. Adapt to what they're going to eat, you know, sometimes. Yeah, but it's crazy to think, man, people ask me all the time, you know, why you got on them rods? And then some guys in the boats, I said, man, so I don't have to retie and kill my time, especially during the tournament. I don't want to have to stop. Yeah.
Or if the bite's hot.
And do stuff, you know, saying, yeah.
Yeah. If that bite's hot, it could shut off at any second, man. So you got to be ready for whatever's out there.
Yep. Sure do. That's for damn sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, man, I know, kayak fishing, you know, been pretty important to you. Wanted you to see to share with your guests, you had an accident, and I wanted everybody to hear, you know, about your, you know, the rehabilitation and stuff in that. Mm-hmm. If you feel free to, you know, if you're okay with sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
And we'd like to let them hear your story and everything. I think it's pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, man. So it'll be 4 years this February. Had a little kickback, you know, with some buddies, bonfire, you know, barbecuing. And I went to relight the fire. Dumb mistake. With gasoline. And the actual fumes around the gas tank backdropped it into the little gas tank I was using, and it blew up. And that was pretty much one of the last memories I remember of that night. And I woke up 2 weeks later at BAMC in the ICU. And I spent 52 days in BAMC with about 40% of third-degree burns over my body, my arms, my hands, stomach, legs. And it was actually the rehab process. The people in that rehab that kind of sparked kayak. You know, I had just got into it. I was beginning to get into it, but it was them that kind of just boosted that interest. It was during the rehab process. They try to find things that you were doing in your previous before your accidents. And I told them that I was just getting into heavy kayak fishing. And at that point in time, we were just getting mobility back in my arms and my hands. And they're asking me, well, what do you do when you go kayak fishing? It's like, well, the majority of the time I'm lifting this 50, 60 pound kayak off the ground into the bed of the truck, or lifting it over the head and putting it on top of the rack. And I was like, all right, well, let's start, you know, manipulating some of the stuff that we have in the rehab at our BAMC. So they had me, you know, deadlifting, you know, 20, 30 pounds and carrying buckets with weights in them, and, you know, getting my balance back on a balance ball. And then as I progressed, they were like, all right, well, we're going to need you to start taking this stuff home. You know, we're going to need you to start doing these things by yourself, you know, away from us. And it was that inspiration, that fire is like, you know, if I could do it here in rehab, I could definitely do this at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, gaining my independence back is what it really was. It was going from my wife taking care of me, you know, like a baby, like a grown baby.
Yeah.
Brushing my teeth, feeding me, you know, cutting my hair, my nails, you know, and then slowly gaining my independence back. It was more so let me do this to prove to myself that this is just a speed bump, that I can overcome this. And that's what it was. You know, I would go outside and lift my kayak, or I would, you know, see if I could, you know, put it on the bed of my truck or unload it, you know, getting my rods together. And it came down to where I needed to learn how to retie leaders or retie loop knots, or, you know, change out lures. You know, it was the basic stuff that we take for granted, you know, stuff that comes second nature when you're on the water, like reaching back for a rod, or,
yeah,
you know, just basic stuff that you you know, people don't even think about. It was those things that I had to relearn.
You got to say with third degree burns, you had to have some skin grafts and stuff.
Yeah,
and
man.
And your mobility might have changed from the way the skin stretched and healed.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Stuff like that. Yeah,
you relearning everything. And then being out there, having that independence kind of, it was something I didn't want to let go. And I just completely involved myself in it to where this is my happy place. You know, everyone has their Zen place, you know, their time away, or that was my, and it still is. And it'll be there till the day that I die. That's where I can go, and nothing else that goes going on in the world. This is my zone. This is my area. This is where everything disappears, and I can just focus on this one thing.
It's true decompression time for sure. Especially when you're there's a lot of times in the marsh that you're by yourself, you know. There's a lot of areas you can go and find stuff by yourself, or when you're fishing at night under the full moon.
Yeah.
There's areas you can go and you'll be by yourself, you know. It's just in times like that where you can reflect and
oh man, they
really true getting some deep thoughts out there.
Sometimes. Yeah, man. I see there's a couple, I see it every once in a while on Facebook or on Instagram, is that a lot of fishermen don't go fishing for fish, you know, they'll go fishing to find themselves and you know, finding, you know, a higher power and stuff like that. And it was that. It was if I can go through what I went through, you know, what else can I overcome? You know, how much further can I take this? You know what I mean?
True. Oh yeah, right on, man. Thanks for sharing all that.
Yeah,
man,
of course.
You know, just to come back from that and have drive and you know, and then aid in the recovery and stuff is pretty cool.
Definitely.
For sure. Yeah. So moving into this little list I got, you know, sometimes I'll take the time and try to get an outline and everything. That's why you see me kind of glance down at everything.
I
take my glasses off, you know, cause I get a glare.
It's like, man, if we didn't have a list, we could probably ramble on about whatever for
hours. Oh, I know. We probably didn't even need a list, but you know, I try to keep it a little bit structured on this. Keep me rolling. I'll throw some stuff off the hip every now and then, though.
Yeah, I got you.
Some too.
Yeah, man.
So you coming back after the injury and everything? I mean, you still had to have a few surgeries here and there.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
I had the accident, you know, really started messing with my hands as far as the skin getting tight.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure you could see it. These little skin grafts right here.
Yeah.
And on my thumb and right here too. So they had to split open some of my skin and put a full thickness graft to get to where my hands could come back and, you know, getting kind of like a push-up position.
Yeah.
Because when I came out, I looked like I was, getting at somebody. So just because the skin was just so tight, you know, in these areas. So, so it was about a year and a half of surgeries after the accident that I had to go back. So that kind of kept me out. It was funny. The day that I got hurt was 2 years to the date of when I went back to work. So it was it was a year and a half process and then like 6 months of being independent before I was able to go back and be efficient at, you know, being a mechanic again, put it that way. So, yeah, man, I met so many awesome people, you know, in the kayak community that I probably would have never met had I not been part of the kayak community.
That's, you know, crazy.
I'm talking from Houston to Rockport to, you know, the 956 area down in the valley.
There's a big old group of all of us that through Facebook groups and all that, we kind of keep up and eventually run to each other on the water.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. But look how, I mean, just, I wanted to get your viewpoint of, you know, what you've seen as far as San Antonio area, the growth that you've seen. I see a lot of San Antonio guys in some of the offshore events too. It seems like there was a good surge of a lot of guys driving down to fish offshore from San Antonio also, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's from what I've seen in the past just 3 or 4 years, it's gone from an interest. And then, of course, COVID hit. So people were anxious to get out on the water, get out of the house. And what better way to get somewhere by yourself than on a kayak?
Yeah.
You know, you're definitely out on the water, you know, away from everybody. And it that kind of just sparked it over here in San Antonio. People, you know, looking to get on the lakes, get on the rivers, or, you know, just to get out of the house, period. And and it was just the last 2 years alone has gone from, you know, people just talking about it, you know, in small groups to where, you know, you got groups from all over Texas, you know, meeting up and having meet and greets and people, you know, people traveling from Houston to come fish, you know, Corpus waters, or, you know, Austin coming down to Corpus, or hell, even us going down to the Valley, you know, stuff like that. And it's fun. It's fun to meet these people that share these same passions with you, you know, the same interests. And cause you end up at the kayak launch or end up, you know, getting back into the truck and you end up spending more time at the kayak launch, you know, chopping it up versus being on the water. You know what I mean? And and I've met people from all over, you know, Texas, just new to it. And then it's gone from people just being in these, you know, everyday kayaks to, you know, complete strangers being in these $5,000 motorized. Completely just, it's been an explosion, put it that way. And it's good to see, you know. It's good to see because it grows a community a lot stronger and a lot bigger, you know, in case you do get in a bind or if you need advice. You know, I've known a lot more kayak guys to be more informative and more helpful than not dogging on the bank guys or the boat guys, but, you know, kayakers have a different edge to them as far as being helpful, put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. So offshore, you know, you've gotten to enjoy some of that over the years.
Yeah. You
know, what's your favorite fish to go out there and target when you get a chance?
Man, go ahead.
You know, the beach launches is cool because, you know, if some people might be listening elsewhere in Texas, there's a lot of beach access we have in vehicles. So that's what you can cool here is that you can drive and kind of pick your launch point and kind of set it up due to wind and current and all that. So
give
a rundown of that, some of your memorable trips and catches on offshore.
So what I wanted to go out and catch were kingfish. You know, you're seeing these guys hold up these giant fish, you know, off a kayak, you know, tie 6 miles offshore. And that's what it enticed me to get a pedal drive. I wanted to get out there and catch a big old kingfish. And it's surf launching. It's crazy. It can get gnarly at times, and you got to go out there with a friend or somebody that's been out there before.
Yeah. You definitely don't want to solo offshore fishing.
Oh yeah, for sure. And we're lucky.
Group is good.
Yeah. And we're lucky here in Texas, you know, to where we can drive on those beaches, you know, out in Florida, you know, you got to either drag your kayak over the dunes or
from the parking lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Or through the parking lot, man.
It's that soft white sand over there. That's pretty dang crazy. If you don't have the tires, you are hurting.
Yeah, but we're fortunate enough to where we can still drive on our beaches for now. But yeah, it's the learning curve getting through those breakers. It isn't too bad, you know, getting out there and, you know, trolling for kingfish. And that's what really wanted me to get out there. And it's fun, man. That initial kingfish run is nothing out there.
Awesome.
It'll dead stop you in the middle of the ocean. You know what I mean?
Yeah, super cool.
And
get them fish like that, man.
Yeah, for sure. But you know, that the kingfish kind of vibe kind of died out, and it was more so let's get into like some snapper or some other pelagics, some, you know, jack crevalles, you know, stuff like that.
Cobia, lean. They like to hang out around structure too. You know, we have near shore standpipes and some of the short rigs near shore within 2 or 3 miles that we can get to in a kayak.
Yeah.
That's some pretty cool options we have, you know, but at times some kingfish will move in, you know, super, super close, you know, around the jetty.
And I've seen people catch them off the beach too.
Yeah. Off the beach also. Yeah.
But, Yeah, man. So that was really cool. That was the inspiration to get out there, just catch a big old kingfish, and that reentry, man. That'll really make you make kind of man up when you when you're coming in that way. So
yeah, it's always good to stow your rods and pull your lures off if you can.
Yeah, by no means I'm not a professional at it, but I've learned some tips and tricks, and you know how to not lose so much gear, put it that way.
you learn how to read the water. Me growing up surfing and learning and knowing where to paddle out and use the rips to my advantage.
Yeah.
And then, you know, looking for where the waves are breaking and where they're not breaking and how to break that down and kind of weave your way through everything. It definitely helped me from being a surfer my life. You know, it's definitely helped me understand the waves, and I'm you know, respectful of the water and the power of the ocean.
You have to be, man. It'll humble you.
It'll humble you real quick, really quick. For sure.
Yeah. But right now it's mainly trying to get out there and when you get into jig fishing, like vertical jigging, slow pitch. Yeah, man. It's kind of blown up here in Texas lately. You know, a lot of the
big thing in Florida, and that slow pitching is finally coming on over here. Right rod, right equipment, and it's downright deadly.
It's more of a technical thing than it is just to going out there and just ripping a bait. So I think that's more of the interest of what I like to personally do is go out there and pick apart, you know, a certain area with a certain lure or a certain condition. And that's kind of piqued my, I've dipped too much money into the slow pitch stuff right now.
Oh yeah, it can be downright expensive. But the key to that is definitely having a great sonar fish finder and understanding how structure and stuff looks too on the bottom. If anybody's listening is curious,
that's a learning curve too, man.
That's a big learning curve. Oh my gosh.
There's so much technology coming out nowadays with that stuff. You know, live scan and bottom view and down scan and. You know, that's a whole nother box of worms, man.
It can open up Pandora's box big time. All that crazy stuff, 360, the true vision, live scan, you know, pan optics and all that stuff.
Man, I got a buddy that just picked up the Lawrence Live View or something like that.
Yeah.
And he took it out to the flats about a month and a half ago. And we could see pinfish coming in and out of the pockets. Mm-hmm. About 15, 20 yards from us. And you could see these little pinfish cruising along, stopping in the pockets, and then cruising along some more. It was the craziest thing. I mean, 4 foot of water, 4 foot of water. And we're seeing redfish ambush these pinfish. It was nuts. It was.
Think about using that in for white bass in the holes when they spawn.
Yeah.
Brush piles with the bass or deep structure for snook or big trout or big redfish on structure.
I told him, you're coming along with me on a scouting trip. I need to figure that thing out.
Yeah, definitely crazy where the technology is going, especially with the ways companies are starting to adapt and make mounts that work with kayaks. There's a few companies out there that have opened up that door, you know, to be able to mount those to kayaks. I know there's quite a few of the trails out there that the guys are on. There's some people out there already using that live scope and 360.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah, there's quite a few guys already out there. Yeah.
Man, that's deadly. If you know how to
bass tournament. I mean, it can make you. It can definitely try to make you put all your eggs in one basket and just use that. But I mean, I'm not going to depend solely on that. I wouldn't.
Gotcha.
I wouldn't. I'd definitely mix it up a little bit.
I mean, put it this way, it's another tool to put in your toolbox. You know what I mean?
Oh yes, another tool in the arsenal, which doesn't hurt at all.
Yeah, don't hurt. Yeah, man. Just like these motors, these kayak motors.
Oh yeah.
That opens up another 15 miles, another 10 miles to your journey. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's going pretty good. I'm stoked to see some of the saltwater trails starting to get on board and allow motors, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
That's a major factor, you know. It's just another tool of the trade, you know.
Another tool,
it helps
man.
With range, it helps with you know not being as fatigued, you know, just like everything else that the technology helps with, you know, really light rods, really light reels.
Yeah.
You know, the way I see it, the more time I have to keep that lure in the water, the better chances of having a fish eat it, you know? Fatigue from casting is a big factor to me too. I like to, you know, I like my gear light and, you know, I can cast all day.
I've seen you cast. I mean, 10 times in 60 seconds. Yeah. I mean,
put it where it needs to be.
I've seen you burn that reel all day long before, man.
I can do that.
It's crazy. And you'd be surprised on how sore you can get the next day. Hardcore fishing like that.
It'll catch up to you on the multi-day tournaments. Especially working in the top water all day. That'll get you.
Yeah.
Man, so we'll get into, you know, this time of year, man, it's just this transition time. You know, like I said, the days are getting shorter. You know, the water's cooling off.
Yeah.
The fish are going to start fattening up for the winter and all that. And then, you know, it's time for me to start switching gears and chasing some trout, trying to get that dirty 30.
Yeah, man. Everyone's trying to get in that group, man. It's a coveted group. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Especially from a kayak. Put it that way. You know, a bulk and burn spots here and there. But, you know, creeping up on a big old healthy mama, man. That takes a little bit of talent to do that.
We got some stealth to our advantage being in that kayak. But then again, it's right place, right time.
Oh,
that fish could have been there, but it's not time for
not
it to
hungry.
Feed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It all comes down to that wind, tide, moon phase, conditions, lure presentation, all that good stuff.
And you got to understand that fish is old. So that fish has seen some changes. It has seen some, you know, it's seen just about everything. So she can be picky. And she has every right to be for being, you know, over 30 and fat and healthy. You know what I mean? So getting that fish to eat what you're presenting to them, that's an accomplishment in itself.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on, and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Yeah, for sure. But being stealthy is a key, and then in lower light conditions at times. I definitely like that. There's less, you know, other big boats aren't running around in the middle of the day or mid-morning and all that. There's not a lot of boat traffic and all that. And
pressure.
The fish might have pulled back up on that flat, you know, to feed,
in
that early, super early, right before sunrise or just after sunset, you know, or in the middle of the night on the full moon, you know, less boat traffic. If you got areas you can hit, man, that's just heightens some chances right there, man.
Oh yeah. I like this time of year because there seems to be a little less kayak traffic because it's cold. The water is damn near freezing, you know, and you're talking launching at dark, getting a little bit of water on you, and it'll freeze you to death. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's transition time, but when this winter time comes around, it's one of, not my absolute favorite, but with these big trout, you know, and these cool mornings, it's a fun time to be on the water.
And a lot of time when it's cold, the boaters get a later start, too.
Yeah.
Or if it's rainy and drizzly, some of them might even go out. But
they don't even go out.
I'm all over it. I have rain gear that's been, you know, I got that wash-in treatment.
Or
you invest in a good scent, like the Gore-Tex stuff is really good, you know, for water, being water repellent and all that. It sucks when it's cold and you get wet. That's what sucks. Yep. If it's cold and you can stay dry and have layers to shed, if it does warm up, that's all good. I'm all down for that. I'll be all over that.
But when you get that pissed off trout, you know, splashing all over you, you know, it's a different story.
Oh man, there's times when you'll be fighting them. They just come up and just rake them gills and shatter, you know, just rattle them and shatter that water everywhere. And it's
just like,
you know, sunglasses got salt water all over them now. I'm just like, God, can you see? I lost a good one the other night.
Oh, really?
It was about 2:30 in the morning. And had a good fish already. Had one, and I had a really good thump, and it tackled my corky, and I don't know how. It's just unbelievable how those fish can strike a lure so fast, and then tackle it, and then not get a hook in their mouth. It's just like crazy how quick they're just so ferocious sometimes.
Man, that thump,
you feel it. But I had that. Yep. I hooked the next one. I thought I had good hooks in it, but it only when I saw it, I didn't have my net. I had left my net at home. Uh-huh. And my headlamp was kind of acting up, but I could see the fish come up beside the kayak. The water's pretty clear where I was at.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and then that lure just ping,
later.
And it was definitely pushing upper 20s. It was definitely a big fish.
Yeah, yeah.
Not over 30, but it was up there.
I tell you what, man, that thump is something else. You know, those are some aggressive fish. There's nothing like that big thump when you get it like an over 25. You'll hit it like it's a freight train, and you'll know you got a good one on.
Oh, yeah. They'll pull drag. When they're 24 or bigger, it's a totally different category of a fight than an 18, 20-inch, 21-inch drag.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're a totally different class of fish, mm-hmm. you know.
Man, I mean, I've only caught – my biggest one is like 26 and a half, but I've caught a bunch of 25s, and I've caught a bunch of 20s. And that 20 to 25 range, man, they're pissed off every time they get a hook in them, man. They are mad. You know what I mean? Yep.
Yeah, I love trout. I'm obsessed with them. I'll drop everything to fish and go trout fishing.
Yeah.
Especially this time of year.
I
mean, I'm sacrificing sleep. Come straight off of night shifts in the morning and go straight to launch or
straight to the water
or get up at one and go fish 2-3 hours before work.
Before work.
That's how mad I can get at them when things are pushed in and feeding and the conditions set up right. I'm not going to miss the conditions are set up right. I'm not going to miss it.
Sometimes it's not when
you're on the water, dude.
Yeah. You got to fish when you can put it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. For sure, man. Well, cool. While we're talking about trout, I usually do a little segment called Pick Three, which is, you know, you pick, you share with everybody what you would have with you to target, say, speckled trout.
Yeah.
Rod, reel, setup, line, lure.
Okay, cool.
Everybody run down the three setups you'd have with you.
Man, my first setup would definitely be a baitcaster, you know, 7-foot, 30-pound braid, you know, probably 20-pound mono. I haven't done floral, but 20-pound mono. And a topwater. Spook Junior Bone, man. That's my confident topwater. I love that thing. You know, if the conditions are right, I would throw it all day like you were talking about earlier. Yep. Throw it all day. There's something about that blow-up, man. That topwater blow-up.
Oh, yeah.
It's like nothing else.
Yep.
Yeah, man. I've had some pretty good trout on some topwater. But that'd be number one. Number two would definitely be... a spinning setup, like a 2500 and 7-foot rod, 10-pound. I recently got into 10-pound braid, only because I can cast that thing a mile.
Oh yeah.
And 15-pound mono, same thing. And I would have a jerk bait on that one for sure. No, I would have a paddle tail. AM. I love the AM lures, man. Those things stink like a mother, but they work.
Oh yeah, they straight, you know, garlic. Smell like you've been in Olive Garden, like bathing in their dipping sauce or something.
Yeah, man. And I like that they came out with I think it was a five or six.
Magnum. Yeah, the big
one. Yeah, the big one. I love that one. On a big old weedless, weightless, you know, hook, throwing it on top of some oyster or something, man. That's definitely a go-to for mine. And a third would be probably another baitcaster. Baitcaster on a 7-foot rod, same thing, 30-pound braid. I like throwing jerk baits. I really got into throwing a lot of big jerk baits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bapalas, like the whatever the 5 or 6 inch long.
Vision 110, Mega Bass makes some good ones. I was going to give a shout out to Jeff Brown out of Florida. If nobody, look him up on Facebook. He's from the Pensacola area. Okay. He does custom painted jerk baits, and I just got a couple of from him, the 110 size, and they're painted like a speckled trout, speckled trout.
Exactly.
And I've done really well on those, and I've done well on some of his croaker imitation, his IU print, IU color schemes. Just they're real iridescent purple.
Yeah.
Those look great, but he's done some really cool baits for me. But yeah, I was stoked to hear you say jerkbait, because there's not a lot of people in Texas that use that tactic.
Like, if they're not hungry, you entice them with that rip, 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 and wait.
Pause.
Boom.
Especially the ones that suspend and don't float back to the surface.
Exactly.
Suspending jerkbait. It's kind of like a catch 2000, you know, it's a lip, it's a twitch bait that does the same thing. It kind of pauses and suspends. The jerk baits, I use them a lot on the bass side, you know, when the water is, you know, starting to get around 68, 65, 60 and cooler. There's just something about that, the way that bait presents itself, like a, you know, just a moving bait fish. It kind of darts when you twitch it with slack in the line. It kind of darts from different directions too. It kind of gives a vision of an injured bait fish, and it
really, exactly,
if you can downsize. I know Matrix makes a pretty good one. Matrix baits makes a little smaller one that swims really well. You know, I've had great success on those with some of the ones that only run 2 foot on the flats over the sand pockets. And then I have some great ones around the deeper shell and pylons and structures too. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of my favorite baits to throw, dude. I love throwing those.
Yeah, definitely. Even if that pause, is what I get the most strikes on that pause. It's that rip, rip, stop. And
it's a thump too, just like a corky thump getting when you pause, like, just like that. They hit it like a freight train. Rip the rod out
of your hand. Exactly.
Sure enough, they sure will. If you're not expecting it, they'll sneak up on you.
I've got some good corkies, man, but that's a patient game for me. And you gotta be dedicated to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The other night I had them, I was probably in about 2 foot of water, flat. The grass is kind of backed off. It was pretty clear. And I was working at corky the same cadence, like a real fast twitch, like I would a topwater.
Okay.
In the upper water column. It wasn't a floater, but I was keeping it in the upper water column. And they were just straight crushing it like that. I was basically twitching as fast as I could reel it in.
Really?
Like burning it and twitching it. And they were freaking straight killing it.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many ways to put a corky out there, man. It all depends on like just knowing what the fish want, man. Sometimes they want that thing slow and just a twitch here and there, or a slow pull and reel, or just flutters real slow. But that night, dude, they was, oh man, straight moonlight crushing it. That Bay Mistress, Corky, Texas Custom Lures, Custom Corky, Bay Mistress. Nice, they was straight smashing.
I gotta give those corkies a shot this winter, man. See if I can get that bite down.
Yeah, they also make that double D. It almost looks like a soft dine.
Okay.
But it swims really well with just reeling it. You just reel it down, it'll swim about a foot and a half down. So it works really good over submerged shell that's only, you know, 2 foot deep or so, three foot deep. Uh-huh. You just burn it and pause, burn it, pause, burn and pause, burn and pause, and then throw some twitches in there. It kind of gets erratic, but it swims pretty good just reeling it in. Jay Watkins offers a lot of good tips on those, you know. That guy's just a flat-out legend, you know, in the Texas big trout scene, just fishing in general, guiding and everything on the boat side. But he always shares some great, great stuff on his Instagram. And, man, those lures are straight fire, man. I've used them for finicky redfish in the marsh, and that pause, they just because it suspends too. It doesn't quite float up real fast. So when you burn it real fast and pause it right in front of them, it's just sitting there, and it's just like that riff is like, ooh,
what is it?
Yeah. And they got a really cool flash. They got a bone one with gold size. It's just fire in the marsh.
Okay.
Oh man, they look so good when they.
I already got so much tackle. I might just add some more to it.
It'd be like a tackle score in my garage. My wife, she don't have any room. I got one whole side. Can't even put a car in there. It's a kayak trailer full of kayaks and a whole wall of
crap. Lures, right?
Man. So, San Antonio, man. What's up with them Twin Lakes, man? We got anybody doesn't know, which a lot of people in Texas do know, we got redfish in the freshwater.
Yeah, man, a lot of people still freak out, you know, especially how big those fish can get, man.
Oh, yeah, some brutes in there.
There are some pigs in there, seriously. And then there are a whole different version of redfish. You know, they're a whole different category of redfish. You know, yeah, they look the same, but I'm talking these fish have 40 feet to dive into and to hang on. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, when you pull them up, you know, when they're really schooled up, you know, these I've caught a 26 inch, I think it was 10 pound redfish.
Oh yeah.
And he looked like he swallowed a football. That's how fat he was.
Yeah.
And we're lucky to have him here in San Antonio. They definitely did right by putting those fish in, to bring more people out there. And I think they stock like 750,000 between the two lakes, if I'm not mistaken. You know, they do it yearly.
Yearly. And, yeah, they got a stocking program year round. Mm-hmm. They can't breed, so that's why they're continuously stocking. In the fresh water, they cannot breed, but all they do is eat and eat.
Eat and swim. Yeah, for sure. And right now they're going for catfish, but you can still get a lot of reds. It's obviously a man-made lake, and it's power.
And they're power plant lakes too, so the water does stay warm. Yep.
Yeah. So they use the lake.
It's active, giant so they're radiator. Growing all year. Yeah, they're mm-hmm. growing all year.
So you can catch them around the warmer areas of the lake, and you know where they're schooled up, and you know they're still gorging on shad and you know tilapia and stuff like that, and they're fun, man. If you're trolling two rods at a time and you run through a big old school, you're definitely gonna double up, and that's chaos. And when
it's pretty cool, trolling around rattle traps, crankbaits. Then you get on top of a school, you can pitch a flutter spoon down to them and all that. I got to experience it for the first time, a few months back at the Fanatic tournament there.
Caught
my first few freshwater redfish. It was pretty fun. I didn't get any big ones, but it's still fun because like you said, there's water. You're in 20, 30, 40 foot of water, and those redfish, when you hook them deep, fight way different than a redfish on a flat.
Big time.
They'll just pull and power. It's pretty dang cool. It's pretty neat experience.
When you're in the marsh, they're 2 foot of water and they're running away from you, but they get tired.
Yeah.
I mean, these fish, when you get hooked into them, they got so much room. And I like catching them on light tackle, 2,500, 2,000 size reels. It's fun. You know what I mean? And if you get a big one that's over 35 inches, you're going to be fighting him for a while.
Yeah.
For a good
one. Because I have one that was like 22 inches. I was like, man, this might be a good one. I might get the money. And I pull it up. It's like a 4.5 pound fish, which is big for a 22 inch fish.
But yeah.
It's like, man, I thought it was a monster. Way bigger than that. He was fighting. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It was pretty dang cool. But you also guide up there, huh?
Yeah. I do. So I had been taking out a family and friends, for years, past 4 or 5 years. My wife was like, why don't you get your guide license? Why don't you start, making it official? And, I did. I took the class actually with Rudy Anda. He's the other guy I got out there too. We went up to Houston and, did the class, got our CPR certs, did our boater's ed. It was probably like a 3-week process and got my guide license. Got the trailer with a double decker trailer on now and was fortunate enough to win a tournament and got another kayak, and that put me in a good position to where I could take bigger groups of three, and it's been fun. The summer was great, man. The summer, it was, if not every other day, definitely on the weekends I was booked. And being able to take those people out there and have them enjoy what I love doing was payment in itself, put it you that way.
Share that and aid people learning more, tips, techniques,
and everything. And it was fun. And I'm talking, people that have fished before but never fished for redfish. Yeah. And I had people that have never even been on a kayak before. And it was always those people who had never been on a kayak, that have never fished, that always caught the most.
Oh, yeah.
Or the biggest.
Yep.
But
share with everybody the name of your guide.
It's the same thing, third degree fishing.
Third degree fishing, yeah. Y'all follow this right there. You follow Mike along on Instagram, third_degree_fishing.
Third degree fishing guide service, kayak guide service, I guess you can call it.
You have a Facebook page for that also?
Yeah, same thing. Same thing with Facebook
and a YouTube channel.
And a YouTube, man. The inspiration behind the YouTube wasn't so much for the guiding. It was just to really just show people, like,
shared. Yep.
Yeah, it was to help people out, you know, showing that, you know, what I'd been through, and to not give up. You know what I mean? I found what really mattered to me most and what helped me get through that hard time. And it just kind of just flowed right into being the guide, you know. You know, sharing my experiences and, you know, what you can do. Just because you get knocked down, you can still get back up and still continue life. You know, little different lifestyle I got going on now because of the accident, but, you know, it's still doable. You know what I mean?
True. Right on, man. And you just mentioned a tournament win. So, you know, you have gotten involved in tournaments, which is awesome because I love them too. I just love the thrill of competition and, you know, and all that. So,
hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
When was that win? That was the Hobie tournament?
Yeah, it was a Hobie Owners down in Corpus. Mike Morales with Fin Factory puts it on. And I had fished it twice before. And, of course, just for fun, just for, you know, hang out with the buddies and give it a shot. But this last tournament, it was in an area that I had fished once or twice. And I'd went out there a month before prior with my now fishing partner, Albert Guzman. And we went out there and fished the area. Didn't really find much. He actually broke his drive or broke his the belt on his 360.
Yeah.
And luckily, he had a motor, so he was able to hook it back. And I stayed in that area, caught a couple fish, nothing too exciting.
Yeah.
And the day before the tournament, I went out, and of course, I met up. Didn't meet up. I just saw other kayakers there. I think it was David Morsed, Corey Ogle, and we're all good friends. And we said, screw it. We'll just all kind of scout together. And
yeah,
man, we booked it across from the boat launch all the way across the intercoastal, probably like a good 4 miles, 4 or 5 mm-hmm. miles. And we said, screw it. We'll just start over there. We'll let the wind push us all the way back to the boat launch. And so we fished that area. Nobody really caught much. And I drifted back to the closest island to where the boat launch was at. And I came into this pocket and I hit one, I think it was like a 25. I was like, all right, cool. Let me move over a little bit further over, like another 40, 50 yards down. And boom, I hit a 28. And I hit that 28. And I was like, all right, that's it. I can't burn this area. The tournament's tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me throw him back, you know, and count my blessings.
Yeah.
Right. So next day, next morning, I think there was 60 or 70 of us in that little marina. And it was a shotgun launch. And me not having a motor, I was like, man, I got to book it. I got to beat everybody out there. And I don't think I've ever been that winded in my entire life on my kayak.
Oh, wow. had that Hobie moving.
Yeah, man.
Moving powered. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Like, I was foot powered. And there was only my partner beat me because he had a motor.
Yeah.
And another really good buddy of mine, Eric, he had his Torquedo. And of course, he smoked me out there.
Yeah.
But luckily, I was able to pull up to the area that I had found him in, and
nobody else was there.
No, I mean there was people here and there, and they were just kind of spread out, you know. Yeah. And man, it was the best fishing day I've had in my entire life. I don't think I'll ever have a flats redfish day any better than that day.
I had one of those this year too.
Man, I had a triple limit. I had caught 15 redfish over 25 by 7:45, 8 o'clock, and I was throwing back 26s, 27s. You know, but I think the second fish I caught was a 27 3/4, and it was just like I had the hot hand. There was no other way to explain it, but it was just the best day I had in my entire life so far, and. By 10 o'clock, I had the two fish. No, by 9 o'clock, I had the two fish that I wanted to turn in. But we just kept hitting them.
Yeah.
And me and my partner now, Albert, we stayed in that area the entire day. Literally the entire day from from the time that we started fishing to the time that we left, which was like maybe 45 minutes before the weigh-in time.
Yeah.
We stayed there all day. And we came out first. I came out first. He came out second. Mm-hmm. And there was one fish that he caught. And I was like, this dude. And it's huge.
Yeah.
This dude's going to beat me, and he's fishing right next to me. And I mean, either way, it was an incredible day. You know, having him next to me and being able to call him my partner now, it was a good day. It was one that I'll take to my grave, that if I ever do have kids, it'll be the day that I'll tell them that was my best fishing day ever. Yeah. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to come out with the win. I won an Outback and some cash, and it helped jumpstart the guide service is what it really did.
Right. That's awesome, you know? Dude. Yeah,
it was just one thing led to another, and it's I've been grateful to have the success I'm having lately.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, that type of day you had. It just, when you have those days, it's like, man, you got to reflect on them. Oh, I had that during the KFT tournament in Kayak Fishing Texas Group, their tournament in June. I had the exact same thing happen. I went to catch trout earlier. I got a decent keeper, and I was just like, you know what? I'm going to go launch to my redfish spot. I'm going to go find them. Okay. And I went straight out there, and, you know, it was crazy. By, you know, the first few casts, I think I had a 27 and a quarter right off the bat. Damn. And then I ended up catching the two 27.75s to max out the two redfish.
No kidding.
Because it was a slot limit. And I probably caught, I think I had 7 or 8 more fish that were 27, 27 and a quarter. Wow. And then over 25, I probably caught 30 redfish that morning.
Yeah. Lee.
And I was off the water, you know, 12:45 or so, 12:30, yeah, yeah. I was done fishing. It was just insane. I launched there about 8:30, my second spot. So 8:45 to 12:30, it was just on, man.
On
and it
fire.
Was like, and it was dead calm. It was supposed to be nasty weather that day. It ended up being really nice, and the wind was light, and the bite, I thought the bite was going to be tough, but it was just, good gosh, they were just.
It's crazy just how like the days, stars line.
Oh, yeah. It was just insane. I like that when that happens, man. It's just,
man, it makes it, those days are, well, let's put it this way. I can have more skunk trips than I can ever tell you about. So those skunk trips really humbled me when I had those that day. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like it makes those days taste so much sweeter, put it that way.
Yeah. Any plans coming up this year for tournament wise? You got some big plans this year? We'll see what comes up on the schedule.
Maybe. It depends. My partner, he's an avid tournament guy. He likes going out there and competing. And, you know, if he eggs me on, you know, I'll join him on if it's a team tournament or something like that. Yeah. Or
y'all just had a win for the Cats event back in October, yeah, right?
It was him, man. It was, he had the hot hand that day. We were able to split up and fish two different areas. And I went to a confident area that I thought I was going to, you know, just slay him. And I caught 22s, 23s, and luckily he went to his confident spot and he pulled out a fourth place win for us.
Yeah, we got fourth place, and then big fish too, right? He had the big fish.
He had a pig. I think
he had like an 8-9 or something.
Yeah, almost a 9-pounder, man.
Giant freaking slot red, man.
Yeah, man. And it's good fishing with him, man. He's it's weird to say this, but he's like my yin and yang, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like he has a different personality, completely different from mine, and we kind of balance each other out. And it's fun fishing with him because he can be this real high intense guy, and I can be real like the real low mellow guy. Yeah. And just
that's how focus. Mike is. Mike Fiorenzi is to me. I'm the one that's all like hoppy and jumping crazy.
Yeah, yeah,
and he's
yeah,
a little
yeah.
more low key,
and
he fishes dirty water in different marsh areas up north.
Yeah,
and then I do that too, but I fish the flats down south.
Yeah,
And that's how this year went for us. It, you know, those first few tournaments, we fished some stuff, and you know, he said, "Man, I haven't burned spoons in forever." I was like,
"Yeah,"
I said, "It's easy. You got it. It's all good." And you know, he adapts well too to different conditions, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, being able to deal with all that, especially weather and different conditions that can have effect. But yeah, tournaments for me are just, I mean, I just love competition. It's pretty damn
fun. And they're fun, man. They're exciting.
And the weigh-ins, the meet, everybody's hanging out, have a couple cold beers or drinks, and there's some food involved normally.
Yeah.
And you know, It's all good. So anything for the upcoming season? You looking forward to anything in particular? I know Galveston Redfish Series is coming back. Hunter Welch has got that going, a team event. I know Saltwater Angler Pro Redfish League is supposed to have single-man events. Okay. And hopefully Cats and Matt and all them get something together, or maybe have more than a few trails. Maybe they'll have
three or four this year. Man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those are fun tournaments. You know, it's good. Those tournaments are good, man. They're able to push yourself. You know, it forces you to learn. It forces you to adapt.
Right.
You know, of course, there's some big money on the line, so it takes you out of your comfort zone. And those are always good places to be, you know, to learn a lot. Even if you don't take a trophy home or take any checks home, you're definitely going to learn that either fishing or after the fact of fishing, you know, talking to everybody. So, yeah, I mean, I'll jump in a few. You know, I won the one that I wanted to win, put it that way. I won. I took it home, and, you know, I'm always for everyone else enjoying that too, you know. So
yeah, because you know, it's just a great feeling to be standing and be around all your peers and, you know, friends that are there, and it gets down and you hear the weights and you're like, okay, I'm heavier than that, man.
Yeah
And then you hear your name first place and you're just like, oh man. The wave of emotion is unexplainable. I mean, damn cool feeling.
and I was fishing against a lot of people that I look up to. I mean, a lot of people that I admire, you know, people that I take advice from, and just to be able to stand, you know, and fish next to them and actually, you know, pull off a win.
Yeah.
You know, it puts all those scunt trips, you know, in perspective, like, hey, you kind of know what you're doing, and you know, to have the congrats, you know, the time on the water, you know, it's finally paying off, and
for sure
to be able to be that and experience that with, you know, friends and, you know, people that I consider family now.
Yeah.
You know, it makes everything come full circle, put it that way.
Definitely does. And I can't relay enough information about that, what you just said, that time on the water. If there's anything that's repetitive from any of my guests on this show, that's big time right there. Mm-hmm. Time on the water does pay off. Anybody can read a fishing report and read this and say, oh, well, they were catching them right here and this and that. And then you go there tomorrow and you're like, man, I didn't catch a damn thing.
Exactly.
You got to know to adapt to the conditions.
Oh, man.
And what to throw, what bait present,
mm-hmm.
tide, wind, salooner times, all that good stuff all comes into play. And time on the water definitely helps.
And the ability to have an open mind and to want to continue to learn also, you know, not being so like tunnel vision. You got to be able to
see the whole picture, not just that
everything.
Keyhole.
Like, you can't just have this. I'm going to go here. I'm going to catch this fish. Yep. You got to be able to like to go find them, you know, because fish have tails, man. They're going to move.
Yeah.
And they're going to move around too, wherever they want.
Damn, Skippy. Right on, man. Well, dude, I really appreciate you coming on, sharing your story too, and all the info out there. Everybody listening, y'all make sure to give Mike a follow on Instagram. Scrolling across the bottom right there, and if you're watching, you can see it. If you're listening, Third Degree Fishing is third degree fishing.
Yeah, same thing Instagram.
Yeah, Facebook, Third Degree YouTube. Fishing. He's on Facebook. He's on YouTube. Check his channel out. If you're in the San Antonio area or nearby and want to go catch some freshwater reds, give him a holler. See you on the water, hopefully pretty dang soon. Get ready for a Pal and Finn Chasing the Tide online CPR trout tournament coming up early part of next year, maybe February or March. Mm-hmm. We'll do a little kayak winter trout showdown. Try to get some of the guys from, you know, Mississippi, Florida, and all that to join in. We had a pretty good turnout last year, so hopefully we'll get that ball rolling, get some prizes and stuff in, and from our show supporters. We have Troubadour & Co. and Waterloo are big supporters of the show. We appreciate the support from you guys out there too, the listeners. Without y'all, we could not make this possible. We thank each and every one of you for tuning in and checking this segment out. And with that, we're going to wrap it up, and we'll catch y'all next time on Chasing the Tide.
Yes, sir.